There's so much attention on the first round of the NFL draft, but it's only one piece of the bigger puzzle. On today's show, we bring on Ben Fennell of the NFL Network and ESPN to take a look at day two and day three prospects. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for the NFL draft, and to do that, we have a guest joining us this morning.
Expert interview.
We have Ben Fennell of ESPN and the NFL Network. Ben, thanks for joining us again. We did this last year.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk draft. We're in the thick of it now. We're only 2 weeks away.
Yeah, just a little over 2 weeks, getting excited. Ben, as we mentioned in the intro to the show, there's so much attention on the first round, but I love having you on to, you know, add some expert analysis to the day two and day three prospects. So how we're going to do this is we're going to kind of look at the biggest needs of the Packers on day two, and then kind of look at every position in football on day three here as we run through some stuff. But Ben, obviously the front seven of the defense is a big need for Green Bay. You're a Packers fan. You know the needs of the team. Give me a player or two that, you know, you think is a day two type of prospect. And, you know, we're talking late round two by the time the Packers pick. You know, who are some guys they should be looking at that time of the NFL draft?
You know, the second I put on the tape of this guy, I thought he'd be a perfect Packers fit in that kind of Mike Pennell, strong side defensive end role. And that's Bronson Cafusi out of BYU, who's been called a gladiator-like player. He's really plays the part in his pads. He's about 6'7", 280, long arms, really well in a phone booth. He can also stand up off the edge. Very versatile player for that BYU front. I felt like he was kind of that perfect mold for us to play in that phone booth and be a two-gapping defensive end like we asked Pendle to do. And we can really use some more depth up front.
Yeah, that's a good, interesting. I talked to Brady Papinga, former Packers linebacker, about a week or two ago about Bronson Cafusi with the BYU connection. Brady Papinga thinks he's a first-round talent, acknowledges he's probably not going to go in the first round, but just interesting that he thinks he is that good.
Yeah, the first time I watched him, I really fell in love with him. I thought, hey, maybe this guy can sneak into the back of the first round. The more I watched, the more I researched, I saw he's still a little bit raw, still a little bit light in the pants, doesn't really have that lower body strength. You know, he really needs to work on lowering his pads, which will always be an uphill climb, being a 6'7", 6'6", type of player playing in the trenches there. But he has a great skill set, and he's a strong kid, and he's versatile. And I think somebody that really fits well in that scheme.
Let's go to the offensive side of the football. Stay in the trenches, though, on the offensive line. If the Packers want to address that on day two of the NFL draft, who might they be looking at?
You know, a lot of people have Kyle Murphy out of Stanford going to the Packers, who would be great tackle depth for us. He's kind of one-dimensional. I see him pretty much primarily as a right tackle. I really like Caleb Benuck from UCLA. This guy is versatile. He played some left tackle, played some right tackle, played some right guard. Very athletic, bends very well. More of that versatile piece, you know, that Don Barclay that you can kind of plug in at tackle, plug in at guard. A little bit more versatility on that second group of offensive line, which I think we have our starters in place. So if we get a guy that can really be that swing tackle and fill in at guard when needed, I think that can just give us a little bit more protection back there.
Some good names for day two right there. Let's go to day three, Ben. And this is where the real analysis comes in when you're looking further down the NFL draft and we find out who knows about these prospects a little bit further down. We're going to go through pretty much every position in the roster because, I mean, this is where teams are liable to address any position regardless of depth, even at a place like quarterback. In Green Bay, despite having Aaron Rodgers, despite having Brett Hundley, if they're looking for a number three guy, who's a quarterback on day three, Ben, that you like?
You know, there's two guys that I think could fall into that sixth, seventh, maybe even undrafted range that we could scoop up. Everybody knows Jay Coker out of Alabama. He's kind of fallen in the back of the pack of a QB class this year. But, you know, he's a big kid, strong arm, obviously led Alabama to a national championship, knows how to run an offense from under center, pro-style system. And also Jeff Driscoll, the Florida transfer who played at La Tech last year, ran a 4.56 at the combine. Very athletic kid. People are questioning if he maybe be able to shift over to wide receiver. But I think he still has some traits to compete as a quarterback. And if you could grab him in the sixth, seventh round, maybe make him a project, sneak him on the practice squad for a year or two, he's somebody that could really develop behind the scenes.
Yeah, I love those names, actually. Good choices there. Let's take a look at running back Eddie Lacy as, you know, obviously the starter in Green Bay, but he's only under contract for one more season. So you never know what could happen there based upon Eddie Lacy's past season in Green Bay. If they're looking for some depth at the position, who might they look at?
Yeah, I have a couple of names here, but just a general statement before we kind of get in all these positions. You know, I feel like this draft and the way the roster is built right now, I feel pretty confident about how we look at the current moment. And I think this whole draft is very reflective to 96. 96, we also had the 27th pick in the draft. We ended up winning the Super Bowl. But if you look at that 96 draft, we really didn't get a whole lot of help from those draft picks. I know Marco Rivera ended up being a great player for us, and Derek Mays had a couple catches. But this is very much a draft for the future. I think next year we have a great roster set up. It's the year after when our guards both come off the cap with Sitton and Lang, Lacy's up. We have a bunch of other big names up. That kind of after 2016, I'm really concerned to see where the direction of the team goes. Mm-hmm. But I really like the roster moving forward at the moment. I think this draft is huge, especially those late-round picks, to really see who's going to be a part of this team moving forward in 2017 and further. So to answer your question about running back, I'd love to see a little bit more dash and slash back there, some more speed. Maybe Tyler Irvin out of San Jose State. He's a smaller guy, about 5'9", 175 pounds, but lightning fast. You know, can stick it up in the tackles, but he's more of a perimeter runner, great in the pass game. And then there's Kenyon Drake from Alabama, who's kind of that lightning to Derrick Henry's thunder. Who is a great runner up in the tackles between the guards. He can run off the edge, catches the ball well, screen game, swing passes, can run the wheels vertically. So somebody with a little more speed and explosiveness back there to kind of complement Lacy.
It was interesting. I talked to Kenyon Drake at the NFL Combine, and he was adamant that he almost took offense to the notion that he could be a complimentary piece, a number two back. He was insisting he was, you know, being a number one guy. And maybe he has that chip on his shoulder after, you know, backing up Eddie Lacy 4 years ago, but then Derrick Henry these past years. It's interesting. He wants to be a starting running back in the NFL.
Yeah, and he has all the traits to be an every down running back. Obviously, what Derrick Henry brought to the team and his physicality and the way he runs is obviously tough to trump and to be a running back over him on the depth chart. But, I mean, Kenyon Drake has some Le'Veon Bell-like skill sets in that he can play every down. He catches the ball well. He's got some shake. He's got some toughness. He's a well-built kid. And I'd like to see him get some every down reps and see what he can do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Let's go to wide receiver. The Packers obviously have depth at the position, but it's also a group that underachieved last season in Green Bay. You wonder if maybe they could find an improvement somewhere. So if they're looking for day three wide receivers, Ben, what are they looking at?
Yeah, one of the more underperforming, underwhelming years from Green Bay wide receivers that we've seen in quite some time. I'd love for them to fill the Jeff Janis, James Jones, get more of a physical, broad-shouldered red zone receiver for them. I know they brought in Mitch Matthews out of BYU. He's a big 6'6", 6'7", Chris Durham, Riley Cooper type receiver that can really create mismatches on the perimeter. I love somebody that can really fend for themselves in one-on-one situations. You can throw some jump balls, throw some back shoulders, a little bit more QB-friendly situations that somebody can kind of handle a situation for themselves. I think Mitch Matthews is really kind of a handful for these defensive backs. Another one's a Devin Cajuste from Stanford, who's 6'4". Also in that Riley Cooper mold. Not an explosive athlete, but he's very strong at the catch point, and he's just a broad-shouldered kid that's really just tough to handle his size. You know, I'd love for them to kind of replace James Jones and find someone that can be a mismatch to those smaller DBs.
Yeah, interesting names there too. Devin Cajuste, I thought he ran really well for his size. You know, he's so big, you expect him to be slow. I thought he ran really well from a 40 time. But
yeah, I think he tested pretty well across the board for his size.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's take a look at tight end. Packers obviously addressed the position with Jared Cook, but he only signed a one-year contract, so may not be the long-term solution at the position in Green Bay. So if they're looking to add some depth at tight end, who's some day three guys there?
Yeah, you know, adding Cook makes the tight end position a little bit less vocal, I guess, in the front end of the draft. So I see a guy like a Tamara Kemingway out of South Carolina State who's very similar to Darrell Adams, just not as far along in the process. He's very raw, more of a tight end project that I think could really learn behind the scenes from a Jared Cook. But if they want to go to a more complete tight end, I really like Henry Krieger-Koble out of Iowa. The great short intermediate route runner, good in the red zone, a pretty good blocker. You know those Iowa kids can pretty much do everything out there. They're going to be a pretty well-rounded football player. And you know Green Bay loves their Wisconsin, Iowa, Big Ten players in the trenches, so I wouldn't put it past them. But I really like Henry Krieger-Koble.
It's just interesting. Henry Krieger-Koble, I think he's like 6'2", 6'3". Is that too short for a tight end in the NFL?
You know, the tight end mold is so interesting. I really have no idea what teams are looking for. We've seen all different shapes and sizes from Tom Crabtree and Spencer Havner and what they asked Kuhn to do. He really is more of a hybrid style player. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's the traditional Y tight end in the NFL where I'm going to put him in the trenches every down, but he has some versatility to be flexed around the offense and two tight end sets and create some mismatches. You know, I think he's more of a versatile player than a traditional.
I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit here. But, Ben, you alluded to before on the offensive line, four Packers players have expiring contracts after the 2016 season. Sitton, Lang, Bakhtiari, and Treader all gone. So I could definitely see him adding some more depth on the offensive line. Who's the day three guy here?
You know, again, I think we're looking at versatility. I would love to get the Michigan center, Graham Glasgow, who looks like he's going to shift over to guard. He's 6'6 for center, which is kind of unusual, but he has the versatility to hop around at left guard, center, right guard. And I think that's what the Packers are looking for. They've always been, whether it's, you know, that outside linebacker, inside linebacker, that safety linebacker, the guard tackle, they're looking for the versatility. I think the Packers really embrace the whole tweener position, the hybrid position. What can you do for us? How much can you do for us? Where can you help us? We don't really want those one-dimensional players. I think somebody like Glasgow that can hop around the interior could really, you know, help out in case somebody goes down like we've seen before.
Yeah, really developed under Jim Harbaugh at Michigan his senior year. But let's take a look at defense, Ben. Defensive line, B.J. Raji is retired at least temporarily. Mike Pinnell is suspended for the first four games of the season. So they need help on the defensive line. Who's a big-bodied guy in day three?
Well, I'd be shocked if we don't go D-line at the end of round one. I'd love to get Andrew Billings or Kenny Clark in there, be an instant replacement to B.J. Raji at nose tackle. But if we have to wait till later on, I really love Matt Iadonis out of Temple. I see a Justin Smith type of, you know, train wreck causing havoc in backfield from Matt Iadonis. He's strong, he's long, he plays low. He's a guy that doesn't want to shoot gaps and get upfield, but he controls his man, plays with leverage. And that's the type of guy that I want, someone that will beat an offensive lineman himself, not with speed, not shooting gaps, not with quickness off the ball, but he'll go through you and control you and move you. And I want a guy like that, Matt Iadonis.
Yeah, you're a Philly guy too, aren't you? Did you ever see him in person?
No, I didn't make it over. Oh, actually, yeah, I was at the Temple Notre Dame game,
okay.
But he really wasn't on my radar at the time then. But the more I watched him, I saw him at the Senior Bowl. He had a great week down there. And the more tape that I've watched, I've really fallen in love with him. I see a Justin Smith kind of in the making here.
Very cool. Let's take a look at outside linebacker, edge defender, or whatever you want to call it. You know, once again, lots of players in the final year of their contract at this position in Green Bay, like Julius Peppers, Nick Perry, Jaron Elliott, all in that final year. So if the Packers are looking for the future here, who might they look at?
Yeah, I put edge pass rusher right behind defensive line depth as far as needs for this entire team. But you can never have too many people that rush the passer, and I feel like we need more that can do it one-on-one. I know Capers would like to dial back the scheme pressure and find more guys that can fend for themselves, allow us to get more bodies in the secondary for coverage. A lot of people have had Joe Schobert from Wisconsin in that slot. I don't know if he's more in the second, third round. I see him more as a late-round pick. He could give us some versatility and maybe play some off-the-ball backer, but I'm really impressed with how he rushes the passer off the edge. He's kind of a sneaky good pass rusher. But if he doesn't fall to us, there's some long edge guys that I really like. Alex McAllister out of Florida, Stephen Weatherly out of Vanderbilt, both long, strong edge rushers. They both have that Alden Smith type of mold that I think could really fill in that Mike Neal role. And if we ask them and want to teach them how to two-tech, they have those two-gap. They have those long arms that they could probably control some tight ends and then have that opportunity to rush the passer one-on-ones. So Alex McAllister, Stephen Weatherly, both raw, both, you know, up and down, consistent play on tape last year. But they have the skill set and they look the part.
Interesting names. I don't know a whole lot about those guys, so I'm going to go dig a little bit deeper into them. Inside linebacker, Ben, obviously another one of the big needs on the Packers roster with Clay Matthews moving back outside. So who might the Packers look at on day three at inside linebacker?
Yeah, that's a popular conversation this offseason. I don't really know where I stand at the moment or if I'm really drinking the Kool-Aid on if he's moving back to outside linebacker full-time or not. I think it's a little early to make that call, but I know a lot of people want us, you know, to kind of target Reggie Ragland in the first round, but I found a fourth, fifth-round version of Reggie Ragland and Steven Daniels out of Boston College. He's a big downhill thumper, really looks like a Desmond Bishop, Reggie Ragland type of player. Obviously a little bit thicker, big legs, big butt on him, but someone that can really stop the run in first and second down. He doesn't have the coverage skills that people seem to be wanting out of our inside linebackers, but that's not what we ask our inside linebackers to do. We need to stop the run first and foremost on the early down, get ourselves into nickel and dime on third down, and have some fun.
Yeah, interesting there at Boston College. You know, I think they take a lot of heat because their offense was so bad, but their defense was just the opposite. They had like the number one defense in the nation, and I think Steven Daniels was a big reason why.
Yeah, he was a fantastic player. I was thoroughly impressed when I put on the tape. I had that similar preconceived notion about the Boston College football team, thinking, they really weren't that great on both sides of the ball. But that defense came to play. They gave everybody a challenge each week, whether it was Florida State or Clemson. And that safety on the back end, Justin Simmons, is a really good player as well.
Well, let's wrap things up, Ben, with the defensive backfield. Obviously, one of the more stocked positions on the Packers roster. But, you know, day three, they might be simply looking to add depth. So who's a defensive back you like?
Yeah, there's two that I kind of like here, both in that hybrid role. One's more of a safety corner. That's DeAndre Hall out of Northern Iowa, who played safety, played linebacker, he played corner. He's 6'2", 199, long, lanky, lean. He's a Missouri Valley Defensive Player of the Year. He's a great ball hawk with good size and versatility. I don't really know if he would be corner or safety right now. I don't think he's fast enough to be a corner, but he's an excellent athlete with excellent length, with experience doing both. So I just love the project that he can maybe be on the back end. And then maybe adding some more depth behind Quentin Rollins at that nickel position. I see Mike Hilton out of Ole Miss in that Casey Hayward kind of Tyrann Mathieu role in the box, playing around the line of scrimmage, physical, sticking his nose in against the run and blitzing, but also can cover the shifty, quick slot receivers. He's only 5'9", about 180, small, but he's quick and he's feisty. That's Mike Hilton out of Ole Miss I really like.
I love it, Ben. I love all these names. Names I got to dig further into now. Now that I've heard more about them, so thank you so much for coming on the show and going through all these positions. It really shows the depth of your knowledge, Ben. I think so. Definitely appreciate that and love having you on.
Absolutely, Brian. It's always great chatting Packers and the draft, and we're only 2 weeks away. It's kind of scary. The season's going to be here before we know it.
Sounds good. Take care, Ben, and thanks much.
Thanks again, Brian.
Ben Fennell of ESPN and the NFL Network joining us here, a producer behind the scenes, a guy who does more film work and watches more film than anybody you know. So glad to have his insight on today's show. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well as we continue on with our next segment.
Packers news of the day.
Lots of Packers news over the weekend. I mean, we're going back a few days here, but this was that traditional Friday news dump of bad news. So our last episode of Railbird Central was Friday morning. We didn't get to talk about it back then, but Friday afternoon, one thing that happened, cornerback Dimitri Goodson suspended 4 games by the NFL for violating the league's PED policy, performance-enhancing drugs policy, according to a report at ESPN.com. So Goodson suspended for the first 4 games of the 2016 season. Now, here I sit and I take a look at it. I mean, Dimitri Goodson is now officially behind the eight ball. Here's a guy who, you know, has been on the Packers roster for 2 seasons and hasn't made much of an impact. You kind of give him a pass his rookie year, but in year two, he was only marginally effective, and he was played probably more special teams than defense out there. And it went through my mind, the Packers might actually go ahead and cut Dimitri Goodson. But then, you know, I think through it for a second, and I wonder, well, you know what? Dimitri Goodson, if the Packers keep him around, he doesn't count toward the 53-man roster those first 4 games. So, I mean, there's probably not a whole lot of hurt in terms of, you know, if they were to suffer a season-ending injury, it's kind of nice to have him in your back pocket where, it doesn't hurt to keep him around. And hey, after 4 games, he can kind of be fresh despite being suspended. There's kind of an upside to that in a way as well, despite, you know, kind of being, you can say you're a little bit rusty if you missed 4 games, but you can also say you're fresh because you're not out there banging around every game either. So, I guess I would say the Packers kind of play it by ear. Now, it'd be interesting if they don't suffer that season-ending injury. Goodson may be at risk because you have to wonder, is it going to be worth cutting someone to make room for him on the roster? Because that's what they would have to do. After 4 games, you know, it's either move somebody to injured reserve, which has a way of happening in the NFL. It's, the Packers aren't going to go 16 games without somebody suffering an injury. I'm sorry to say it's going to, even in a good year, it happens to a few players. So, but if, you know, just so happens that it doesn't work out in terms of the timing, you know, let's say they get through the first 4 games of the season clean, you know, then you got a choice to make. Then you got to cut someone. And are the Packers going to cut a cornerback? Or are you going to cut a nice young up and coming cornerback like a Ladarius Gunter or a Robertson Daniel who you kept around while Goodson was gone? This is going to be a really interesting thing to watch here. This suspension here. I think the Packers they can afford certainly right now. The roster's at 90, so it doesn't hurt to keep them around. He can participate in training camp. He can participate in the preseason and basically get ready for the season like normal. But yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting to watch what happens when they're forced with that decision to bring him back on the roster, because, you know, there's a little bit of potential there, but how much is it enough to justify, you know, cutting someone at his expense? So, interesting story that unfolded here this past weekend to see how this ends up playing out. And the other big news that came down the pike this past Friday afternoon, the Packers released linebacker Nate Palmer. And this is a guy who made a career-high 10 starts and 68 tackles this past season for the Green Bay Packers. Once, you know, Sam Barrington went down with the season-ending injury this past year, Palmer was the guy who replaced him in the starting lineup before he himself was replaced by Jake Ryan, basically midway through the season, a little bit later, three quarters of the way through the season, we'll say. I might argue that it took the Packers too long to make that move, but it, you know, was Nate Palmer undeserving of a roster spot as a backup? That's arguable. I thought the timing was curious of the move. I would have thought that they would have released him before the start of free agency just to give him the best opportunity possible. I mean, when you know you're going to cut a player, that's typically the way it works out. Even if he's not the player you want him to be, you wish the best for him regardless, but there's no rules or any obligation for the Packers to do so. They can release him at any time they want. So I wonder if maybe there's more than meets the eye to this release in terms of, you know, him getting in trouble or things like that. But, I have no indication to think that. So there's nothing we can really do but wait to see and find out if that were the case. But regardless here, the Packers making a roster move. So no more Nate Palmer. He was a sixth round draft pick of the Green Bay Packers. To be honest, this was kind of a head scratcher to me, the drafting of Nate Palmer, because he was one of those guys who you never really heard. You may have heard of him if you're a diehard draft, person and you buy multiple draft guides, in-depth things like that. You may have heard of him, certainly, but I know I was surprised when the Packers drafted him in the sixth round. I certainly could have thought they could have waited at least one more to a seventh round or something like that, if not even sign him in undrafted free agency. Obviously, they didn't want to take that chance that he wouldn't sign with them as an undrafted free agent, so you invested draft choice into him instead. But I mean, there's a couple picks every year that I shouldn't say a couple, but there are certain picks where sometimes it puzzles me sometimes. And Nate Palmer is one of them. And worse than that, I think was the selection, two drafts ago now of Kyrie Thornton. Yeah. I mean, I almost probably have to jog your memory with this one. Defensive lineman Kyrie Thornton in the third round 2 years ago. So we're talking the 2014 NFL draft. Once again, I mean, somebody if you're a hardcore, draft fan, draft guru, you may have certainly have heard of Kyrie Thornton. But again, being drafted higher than I ever expected anybody to do so. Thought the Packers certainly could have waited to get him another round or two later. Some of these choices here, coming back to bite the Packers, Kyrie Thornton already released. Now Nate Palmer doing so as well. I'm sure if I were the GM of the Green Bay Packers, I wouldn't make mistakes too. So it's, I can sit here on my high horse and criticize from afar, but I shouldn't, mistakes are going to be made. You just wish there were fewer of them, I guess, than the Packers have made. Certainly it's a little bit easier to swallow when you're making mistakes in the sixth round as opposed to a Justin Harrell type mistake in the first round of the NFL draft. So anyway, two weeks away from the NFL draft here, and that's what our next segment's going to be about.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, now I don't have an exact date here. I'm not saying this is happening on Monday or anything like that, or the next 24 hours, but I'll share what I know. It's exactly what Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported on Sunday, and that's that the Packers are bringing in one of their 30 prospects allowed to make a pre-draft visit to Green Bay, and they're using that on Temple wide receiver Robbie Anderson. And interesting prospect here. Temple this past season. I'm familiar with Robbie Anderson because Temple was such a good team this past year. They actually played on national television multiple times including we just talked about with Ben Fennell. They played that game against Notre Dame that was primetime national television, ABC. So I know I got a chance to see Robbie Anderson play that game. And it's interesting. I mean, the thing that stands out is he reportedly ran a 4.3440-yard dash at his pro day. I mean, that's elite speed right there. When you're running sub-4.440s, that makes you do a double take. And I'm sure that's what the Packers are looking into a little bit deeper here. Want to learn a little bit more about this prospect here. The drawback, or the thing that makes you hesitate and the thing that, you know, prevents him from being a high round draft choice, is that Robbie Anderson is 6'3", but just 190 pounds. I mean, you look at him and he looks, you know, he looks rail thin. He looks like he may not be able to hold up in the NFL, or, I mean, that's your worry at least. But, you know, there's some kind of guys who, you know, are just wiry strong, you know, that are, they may not, you know, pack on a lot of pounds, but they're kind of those guys who are just, you know, they're a wire, you know, they're tough, you know, and maybe that's what Robbie Anderson is. It's interesting. I mean, that the speed is hard to deny. So anyway, yeah, the Packers making him one of their pre-draft visits here. Tom Silverstein didn't provide a date. Don't know when this is happening. He reported it on Sunday. I don't know if it happened on Sunday. It's happening today. It's happening tomorrow. But anyway, sometime here, you know, either in the recent past or near future here happening. Obviously, not a whole lot of time left until the NFL draft. So these draft visits will be taking place, you know, very soon if they have not already. So there you go. There's your day ahead segment in the world of the Green Bay Packers. And that pretty much wraps up today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you once again to Ben Fennell of ESPN and the NFL Network for joining us, you know, basically making his annual appearance on the show. Glad to have his insight and glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, we'd greatly appreciate it if you gave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So do us a solid, give us a rating and a review. Just search Cheesehead TV on iTunes. It'll pop right up because it helps us get word out about the show. So thank you if you've done so already. And I know few of you have. So thanks a lot. That'll do it, folks. Have a good Monday. No show Wednesday. I'm busy. I got some things going on. We'll be back again on Friday. So got to wait a few days here. Sorry about that. But have a good couple days, and we'll talk to you again on Friday. I leave you today, folks, with a song called New Country Blues by the Emmett Nershey Band on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack Go.